Let's turn to the book of Ephesians. This tremendous passage, the Christian in complete armor. Someone has asked the question, why is it that there's so much war in the Old Testament? Why is it that there's all these things as you read through the Old Testament? There's wars and wars and wars. You read through the book of Numbers, and there's all these different battle accounts. Then you get into Joshua, and it's all about battle. You get into Judges, and there's constant wars. You get into the Kings and Chronicles, and there's constant invasions and defenses. And God was drawing a picture of the reality that we face. In the Old Testament, we have the physical representation of spiritual truths. If you've never grasped that, we need to grasp it. In the Old Testament, we have the physical representation of spiritual truths. That's why so many of the prosperity preachers today want to preach out of the Old Testament, because in the Old Testament, blessings were a physical blessing. Enemies were a physical enemy. Weapons were a physical weapon. They were swords or slings or arrows. But in the New Testament, we have a different situation. We have the true spiritual struggles reveal. And so, in the New Testament, we read that our enemies are not Al-Qaeda. Our enemies are not atheists. Our enemies are spiritual beings who are just as real as you and I. And so he says, finally, be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power. Put on the full armor of God. So that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything, to stand. Stand firm then, with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, and with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. And in addition to all this, take up the shield of faith, with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. And pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. And with this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the saints. Today, we come to the feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. Now, I don't know if you can comprehend, you know, growing up in New Jersey is so different from some places. The very ground is different. I remember years ago when our first when Kathy miscarried and we lost our first child, how we wanted something to remember the child. It's very hard if you've ever had a miscarriage, because it's different than even having a child die, because it's like somehow unreal because there's not a body and you don't have a funeral, and it can be a very difficult time. And so we wanted something to remember this child, and so we talked to my parents, and we had my father dig up a tree from the farm and bring it down, and we planted it at the house where we were in Bridgeton. And my father spent hours digging out this tree in Pennsylvania. And I went out and I dug the hole and I came back in. Dad said, "Are you giving up already?" I said, "Giving up? The tree's already planted. I'm ready to water it." And he couldn't believe it. And he went out and he looked and he goes, "You got to be kidding." He never dealt with sandy soil. But you know, we live in a place where you can go out and you can go barefoot. And generally, it may be a little hot on your feet. But the ground is soft. But not so in Israel. Israel is a land of stones. In fact, there is an old wives' tale, an old legend among the Jews, that when God created the earth, He decided when the fall came and Adam had sinned, he cursed the ground, that God gave an angel a giant sack of rocks. And He told the angel to take the rocks and spread them all over the world as part of the curse. But as the angel was flying over Israel, the sack ripped and all the rocks fell out. In Israel, you don't walk barefoot. And so one of the most important items that a soldier had was his shoes. Often because of the climate, they would have been sandals, but they were not the kind of flip-flops that people think of today. They were leather sandals that would be tied sometimes well up the leg. And the sole was very thick, either a hardened leather, reinforced leather, or sometimes even they would put a metal plate in the sole of the shoes. And the reason was twofold. First of all, there were natural obstacles. There were thorns and things like that that just grow everywhere in that climate. It seems like the plants there are armored. They have to be to survive. And it's nothing to see plants with thorns a good inch or more in length. Now, can you imagine how disruptive it would be to fighting to step on something like that and have it pierce your foot while trying to carry on warfare? So first of all, they needed it to protect their feet from the natural obstacles, the stones and the thorns. But second of all, the enemy would you do a trick that would try to help in defeating during battle. They would sow something on the ground called a caltrop. Now, have you ever played the game of jacks? Remember where you bounce the ball and you grab up those little jacks? Did you ever wonder where those jacks came from? Exactly. Those jacks, you know, many of the games that we have were designed out of military application. Think about the Olympic Games. How many of the Olympic Games? The hammer throw, the javelin toss. archery. We're all part of military training. Jax was actually a kid's form of military things, because those little jacks, those little toys, were tiny copies of what enemies would often throw in front of them on the ground, right in front of their lines. Jacks about yay big. Sharpened to a pinpoint. And as you were advancing towards the enemy, all of a sudden you'd come to a place that would be their equivalent of a minefield, where these caltrops had been sown all over the ground. And as you're trying to charge the enemy, suddenly you can't walk because your feet are cut to ribbons. And so, one of the most important pieces of armor, and we think, you know, what shoes? But one of the most important pieces of armor that a Roman soldier wore was his shoes. And Paul takes the opportunity to compare that to our spiritual battle and says that our shoes, the things that protect our feet, is our readiness to present the gospel. Now, again, we've talked about this, but this is important. People sometimes talk about the Spirit and they say, oh, I'm putting on each piece, sort of like they're visualizing or one of these New Age things. But I want you to see, as in all the other pieces of armor, this isn't some metaphor. It is a physical, literal thing. We need to prepare ourselves with the preparation to present the gospel. We need to be prepared. Our feet need to be fitted with the preparation. Now, the allusion goes back, as did earlier ones, to the book of Isaiah. Look with me at Isaiah chapter 52, verse 7. Isaiah 52, verse 7. Isaiah is prophesying of a future time after the destruction of Israel, which he has foretold, after the people are dispersed, after Israel is destroyed. He looks beyond that glorious day when Israel will be restored. And he says in 52, the first verse, "Awake, awake, O Zion! Clothe yourself with strength. Put on your garments of splendor, O Jerusalem, the holy city. The uncircumcised and defiled will never enter you again. Shake off your dust. Rise up, sit enthroned, O Jerusalem. Free yourself from the chains on your neck, O captive daughter of Zion." He's proclaiming a good message that even though you have been in captivity, the captivity is going to end. And then he comes down to verse 7, and listen to what he says. He says, "How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news, who proclaim peace, who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation, who say to Zion, 'Your God reigns.'" Listen, you watchmen. Lift up your voices. Together they will shout for joy. When the Lord returns to Zion, they will see it with their own eyes. And Isaiah says, it is these beautiful feet. It is the one sent to proclaim a blessed message. that's what we're called to be. We are called to be sent ones. And so, God says that we need to prepare ourselves with that message. Look with me at 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. First Peter 3:15, but in your hearts set apart Christ as Lord. And we've talked about 1 Peter 3:15. We've talked about the heart and the breastplate that guards the heart. But he doesn't stop there. He says, always. Now think about that word, always. I remember one of the things, and I was having a discussion with someone a little while ago, and they said that they were upset that when they were younger, I made them buy a Bible rather than giving it to them. And one of the first tests that we ever had when I was first saved, of the people who made a profession of faith and came out, was, would they buy a good study Bible to begin to learn the Word of God? If you're going to be a carpenter, you better have good tools. Isn't that right, Tom? And a lot of them. Yeah. Helps to have thumbs to hold them, but the tools matter. You can be a duffer and have an old hammer that you dig out of the junk drawer. But if you want to be a real workman, you better have the right kind of tools. And you know, you can tell the true professional from the person who just, you know, oh gee, I'll slap a couple of boards on it if I have to, by how much they invest in their tools. Because you see, some of us. And then there's those who want to be. And three fingers to hold them. How invested are you in your spiritual tools? How invested are you in your spiritual tools? Always be prepared. Are you ready to present the gospel clearly? Now let me talk about two different areas of being prepared. First of all, you need to be prepared intellectually. You cannot present a gospel that you do not understand. You cannot share what you do not have. Do you understand the gospel well enough to present and defend it clearly? Notice what it says of the Apostle Paul. And remember, he is not the Apostle Paul at this point. He is merely a person who has received Christ as Lord. Look with me at Acts chapter 9. Acts chapter 9 recounts Paul's conversion. in the beginning, in the middle of verse 19, it starts a new paragraph and says, Saul spent several days with the disciples in Damascus. And after 5 years, is that what it says? After you know, he dilly-dallied for half of his life, is that what it says? At once, he began to preach in the synagogues that Jesus is the Son of God. He immediately began to preach. And all those who heard him were astonished and asked, "Isn't this the man who raised havoc in Jerusalem among those who call on his name? And hasn't he come here to take them as prisoners to the chief priests?" Yet Saul grew more and more powerful and baffled the Jews living in Damascus by proving that Jesus is the Christ. Paul prepared himself. Be prepared to give an answer. But it's not enough to prepare ourselves intellectually. That is not enough. We need to prepare ourselves in our attitude. We need to have an attitude that says, I have been sent here on a mission. And so when Paul talks in Ephesians, notice what he says about the gospel here. He says, and your feet, verse 15, Ephesians 6, verse 15, and with your feet fitted with the readiness. There is an attitude that says, I'm not here to make a lot of money. I'm not here to be a good person in the community. I'm not here to just raise a family. I'm not here to be a friend of my friends. I'm here on a mission, and that mission represents Jesus Christ. And I do all of those other things, but those aren't the mission. And he said, that's what covers our feet. Now, why would this readiness, why wouldn't the readiness be a helmet? Why is this readiness to proclaim the gospel shoes? Why on earth would you equate that with shoes? Let me give you a possible explanation. Our feet are the place at which we most often contact the world. Our feet is our primary source of contact with this world. Throughout most of my life, my feet are on the ground. And if I'm Bob, I want to keep it that way. What Paul is saying here is my attitude of a readiness to to present the gospel is what guards me in my contact with this world. And it protects me from two things. First of all, it protects me from natural threats to my feet. We talked in the beginning of this message about how Israel has thorns and rocks and things that can slice open your feet. And you need good shoes. My attitude as being a missionary sent from God protects me from the natural dangers of contact with this world. Without it, I quickly succumb to the threats of this natural world. If I do not see myself as a missionary and I go to work, and they're all sitting around gossiping and talking about this one and talking about that one, how quick is it before I'm drawn in? How long is it? If I don't see myself as a missionary, as a representative to Jesus Christ, that my language begins to become corrupted by the world around me? My thinking begins to be corrupted. They're all just talking about vacation, and pretty soon, suddenly I'm thinking about, oh, just vacation. They're thinking about the weekend, and they ain't thinking about the weekend because it's Sunday's coming. And I begin to become corrupted. You see, the natural interaction with people, the natural interaction with this world corrupts us. And those shoes of being ready, having the attitude, having the mental thought process that I'm there on a mission. I'm there in my home on a mission. I'm there at school on a mission. I'm at work on a mission. I'm in my neighborhood on a mission. That protects me from that. Notice what Jesus says about this. Look with me at John chapter 13. John chapter 13. John chapter 13. John chapter 13, beginning at verse 2. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under His power, and that He had come from God and was returning to God. So He got up from the meal, took His outer clothing off, wrapped a towel around His waist. After that, He poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around Him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to Him, "Lord, are You going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." No, said Peter, you shall never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Then, Lord, Simon Peter replied, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, a person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you. Now, what's Jesus saying here? This is certainly not just about physically washing feet, because Jesus says, unless I wash you, you have no part of me. And having heaven. Jesus is making a principle here. And he says to Peter, Peter says, then wash everything. Jesus says, you don't need that. You've already had a bath. But you still need your feet washed. You see, when we come to Christ, God bathes us in the blood of Christ. And he cleanses us. But as we contact this world, as we talk with the people of this world, as we interact with the things of this world, our feet become dirty. Our feet get dirty. He says it's not that you need it to be saved all over again. He says, but your feet are dirty. Therefore, I have to wash your feet. Paul takes that a step farther and says, you need a barrier between you and this world to protect you from its influence. You need shoes fitted with the readiness of the gospel of peace. And he says, the barrier that protects you is a mindset that says, I'm ready to proclaim the gospel. I am a messenger sent with an urgent message from an important king to a needy people. And whenever we forget that, we lose our protection on our feet. This world begins to seep into us through our feet. This world cuts us and pierces us and infects us. But second of all, not only do we need that attitude to protect ourselves from the natural dangers of the contact with this world, but second of all, the enemy lays traps for us. The enemy lays traps for us. He puts down caltrops. He lays down sharp obstacles to render us ineffective and unproductive and crippled in the faith. And only the shoes armored with the readiness to present the gospel can protect our feet from these attacks of the enemy. I think about how many pastors in my lifetime, national leaders, but not just national leaders, other people who are pastors and church leaders fell into immorality. And in almost every case, it was with people that God brought to them to be ministered his gospel, not to be taken advantage of. But in every one of those cases, those men, and maybe women, who knows, I don't know, lost their focus that I've been sent with a message. And so what God meant to be an opportunity of ministry became a trap, a caltrop set there by the enemy. A landmine waiting to go off. How ready are you to present the gospel? Do you have the mentality? Every day, do you tie it on with your shoes that says, I have a job to do today? I'm a representative of the King. Do you strap on those shoes, not some mental exercise, but some literal thing where you begin your day looking not for contact with this world that will dirty you, but with an opportunity to be the messenger you were sent to be? The only thing that will protect you in your contact. Do you know where Israel lost it long ago? It wasn't when they began to worship Baal. It started long before that, when they failed to see themselves as evangelists to the people worshiping Baal. God said they were to be a people through whom all the nations of the world should be blessed. Isn't that what He said? It should have been the people of Baal that were flocking to throw Baal away and chase after God. But they forgot they were missionaries. And so they became mission fields for the enemy. And the day you and I begin not to act like missionaries, we become a mission field for the enemy. What are you, a missionary or a mission field? So often people want to go, I remember years ago, one of my heroes, Dawson Troutman, talking about how because of the gifts God had given him, a lot of mission organizations would use him to talk to new missionary recruits before they were commissioned. And there were several different mission organizations upon which called on him to do that. And every one of their candidates had to come and talk to him privately for an hour or two. And he said, we talked about a lot of things, but he said, I always ask three questions. He said, question number one was always, do you have a quiet time with God? He said, most of them would start, well, you know, I'm in jungle training now, and we've lived out in the jungle, and we had to, you know, we went out with nothing but a hatchet and a match, and had to build our shelter, and had to catch our food, and I haven't had a quiet time, you know, because I've been at jungle training. They'd say, okay, how about before jungle? Well, before jungle training, we were in language training. We had to learn all the principles of translating a language and learning a new language and developing an alphabet. And they crammed 6 years of work into 2 years. And he said, okay, how about before language school? Well, I was in Bible school and I was, you know, how about before Bible school? And he said, not one out of 20 of those men or women ready to go on the mission field had a regular time with God every day. And he said the second question he asked was, give me a list of the people that you've led to Christ that are living for Jesus Christ today. And he said people would begin to hem and haw, and they'd talked about the tracts they'd handed out or the people they'd talked to or the this or the that. But he said they couldn't come up with names. And he said not one in 20 could usually give him a name. And he said to these people in response, he'd say, so you're telling me you're ready to go halfway around the world to a people whose language you do not understand, whose culture you do not share, who do not trust you or look on you as someone that they can trust and communicate with, to do something you've never done with your friends at home. When you put it that way, it sounds pretty stupid, doesn't it? Because, you know, a lot of us think, oh, if I were to go on the mission field, then the mission field go on. It's right here. It's something you go out to. And this mental attitude that says, I am a person sent on a mission. That's what God has always wanted. We're going to close with this. Look with me at the Gospel of Luke. The Gospel of Luke, chapter 10. Gospel of Luke, chapter 10, beginning at the first verse. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others. This isn't the 12. This is a lot of people. This isn't, oh, well, that's Peter and James. And no, these are 72 guys. You know what? We don't even know their names. They're unknown, unheralded, unrecorded, ordinary people just like you and me. The Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. He told them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." And then what's the next word? Go. Isaiah 6. Isaiah sees God, and what's God's message? Who will go? Last thing Jesus says, Matthew 28, 19 and 20, all authority is given me, heaven and on earth. What's the next word? Go. And you know, it doesn't have to be... doesn't have to be, oh, we need to get organized and go out. No. That's great, and yeah, we ought to do that, but the bottom line is, we need to go. Go into your work. Go into your neighborhood. That's where God put you. Go to your friends. Go to your enemies. That's where God put you. go with this attitude armoring you. I've been sent with an urgent message. Let's bow together. Lord, here we are. Lord, this world is going to dirty us. It's going to try to cut us and infect us. It's going to try to fill us with the stuff. It's going to try to grind it into us just like sand into the shoes. And only the shoes of the readiness to present the gospel can protect us in our contacts with this world. Oh God, give us the attitude of those 72 that among all the other people, they heard you clearly enough that they were willing to go just because you said go. Lord, may we not forget this. May we not lose this. May we take it with us. May we see ourselves as missionaries. When we go to open our mouths in the way we behave and how we live, oh God, help us to remember this. In Jesus' name, amen.